Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the first episode of the second season of Wesley and Willie. Willie, welcome to the show.
Hello, Mr. Wesley. Thanks for having me.
I don't even know if the first season can qualify as a season. It was a series of attempts to make the program live.
Okay, at least we promise now to go steady.
Yes.
From my part, at least.
I mean, since we decided to do that broadcast, the world has experienced several shakeups.
Several catastrophes.
We are in a new world. But let's talk about first. So for our audience, those of you who want to know the idea behind Wesley and Willie, please visit wesleyandwillie.com. Watch the first episode, episode zero, and we'll talk about the idea of it. You are part of the program, so please do participate with your questions and comments. First, Willie, we have a breaking news. I mean, according to CNN, we just heard the official news that Biden will be the 45th or 6th, 46th?
46th, yeah.
President of the United States. What's your reaction to this news?
I don't know Biden, but I'm happy that Trump has gone. This is my first reaction. And having the first woman vice president is also news. And I wasn't so, my reaction, like I was pro Obama myself. So since he was the vice president of Obama, so I'm pretty much positive about him. I know he's gonna join the Paris Accord. This is what he announced. This is what he announced even a few days ago. He said this is the first thing he will do after he wins the election. And the second positive thing about his election is that he's gonna rejoin the joint comprehensive thing between, it's about the Iran nuclear accord. It's called the joint comprehensive action or something. So I think the world will be more peaceful, I think. Now, some people would argue that Trump never launched any war. This is correct. But his economic sanctions affected very, very, in a very bad way, Iran and Venezuela, worse than any real wars. So he was throwing sanctions left and right against states and against individuals. Anybody who doesn't go with his politics, he would just throw sanctions against them. And also, even though he's good, I think he could be classified as a good president vis-a-vis the economy of the United States. But yet he was, in terms of like the dichotomy of the divisions between the Democrat and the Republicans, he was just fanning the flames, the flames of division. He didn't unify America, and what we saw in the election is a real example of what I just said. But my question to you, Mr. Wesley, did you go to the polling station, or did you cast a vote by mail, by ballot? So,
once I received the ballot by mail, I casted my vote by mail. That's my attitude with mail. I try to once I receive mail, I open it and process whatever I need to process and throw it away. I don't like to clutter the house with papers. So once I received and that was a while back. I just want to talk about this for a second because that was a while back, and about a month and a half back. And here's why this is important. So when I got the ballot, I opened it and I voted. And to tell you the truth, I left most of it empty. The reason is I just didn't know any of these candidates. Most of the reach out and advertisement and sponsorship, endorsements, happened after I received the ballot, a while after I received the ballot. I typically trust AIPAC, the AIPAC with the A, not with the I, the Arab American Political Action Committee, they have a bunch of endorsements, and I usually endorse whoever they endorse. But I opened the AIPAC website, and it was not updated since 2018. I think they weren't ready. So anyway, I voted whoever I could vote, and I left the rest empty, and I sent it by then. I started receiving, this season in America, people have been bombarded with calls and texts, but I received everything way after it, the matter of fact, and it was too late.
And I know you're not a fan of Joe Biden yourself, right?
Well, I'm not a fan of either. I'm a fan of I'm pragmatic. I don't believe in this way of governance. I believe more in collective councils. I don't believe in so much power focused on one person. That's very archaic. That's a concept that was invented by the pharaohs maybe. And we still have it, that one individual should have so much power. Who believes in this today? Why would one person have so much power? I mean, how can one brain, hold so much executive power? That's just a very archaic, very primitive and ignorant idea today. But, we're very resistant to change. We're afraid of it. We're untrusting. That's the biggest thing. We don't really trust each other. So that's why that's the biggest obstacle of change is trust, really. But, so I'm not a fan of any one person specifically, but I like things, pragmatically. Like Bernie Sanders was ideal for foreign policy, for example. I like Trump's support of big business. I'm pro big business. I'm pro capitalism. I like Biden's commitment to environmental change. He reached out to the Muslim community a little bit late, and not because I...
Well, at least he did that, even late, better than never.
Yeah, right? He did. Yeah, of course, it's a good thing. He made it up, Saraha. And his vice president came to Dearborn, his wife came to Dearborn, to Shatila, and Kamala Harris, she came, she ate falafel. They reached out to the community, kind of late, but better than that. And they have kind of a commitment, they gave a commitment to include us on the table, to include Arab Americans, Muslim Americans on the table of discussion.
Right.
So that's a great thing. You said something that I quoted you on Facebook, and I believe in it. If there wasn't enough reason to celebrate Joe Biden's presidency, except pissing off, and excuse my expression, Netanyahu
and
MBS, then that's enough to celebrate. When these two individuals,
he really turned politics into a circus, and he's the only president that I can remember that he didn't abide by the political correctness, which all American presidents were famous of, and at least now we're not gonna hear this like far right rhetoric. And this far-right rhetoric, I don't think it even resonated with the core of America. And the proof is that some of the core state of like the heart of America, like Wisconsin and Michigan and Arizona voted for Biden. So yes, I'm even like euphoric about it, not only happy. So yeah, I like this, and I know that the entire world is, except for a few states that you mentioned, mm-hmm. like Saudi Arabia, the Gulf states, Israel, they're not happy with the election results. But my question to you,
and we're even talking about like administration. I don't know about people.
Right. Yeah. You're right. Do you think there's going to be an easy transition of powers?
No.
It's not going to. All right.
I mean, this guy doesn't lose. You know,
he's not man enough to admit defeat. Correct.
I don't want to insult him. Yani, I think it's just a psychological thing in his brain, and that can be actually a powerful thing sometimes in business. I think he's successful in business because of his denial most of the time.
Right.
Because sometimes, you know, you have to, you know, sometimes your attitude makes a difference, and your obstinance, like when you don't accept facts and you fight them. Sometimes, you know, you take it a little bit far and you actually change them. And if you see documentaries about Donald Trump and his business strategies, and you know, he's tough in that way. So, but in politics, it creates headache. And I think he believes that. Like, he believes that he won. He tweeted it today. Like, he won by majority. He tweeted it, so it's official.
Well, even the popular vote, he only got about 70, and Biden got 75. So I don't know how he calculated that he won. And it was in the news today also that some of his top aides are pushing him to concede and to proclaim his defeat, but he's not doing it. So let's see. But I think he's going to do it either today or tomorrow. You think he's going to do it?
He's going to do it because many of his allies will pressure him.
But he's thrown litigations right and left.
Yeah, but many of the people around him, they'll tell him, just concede, man. It's too far. It's not like, if it was only Nevada, I was worried about Nevada. Like, if it was only Nevada's difference, if Arizona and Pennsylvania didn't flip, or Arizona was for Biden, but Georgia and Pennsylvania didn't flip.
And by not conceding, he's undermining the whole electoral system in America, right?
Electoral, yeah, he is. Yeah, he is undermining
democracy also.
He is, but it's also part of democracy, right? Because there is checks and balances, and there is. You can, as an individual, you can do whatever you want to do. At the end, there is law and there is judicial, branch, and you might be escorted out from the White House. And that's a beautiful thing in America, that a police officer can escort a president from public housing. You know.
Exactly. Yeah. So basically, you're happy about the outcome of the elections. Right.
Yeah, I mean, I really lost. I lost passion when Bernie lost. It was a surprise to me. But also, you know, also Bernie wasn't also the ideal candidate, because what we've watched in America in the last year unfold is an extreme left agenda, which was emboldened by Bernie. I'm not sure if I don't count Bernie as part of it, but I think Bernie would not be able to control it.
When you say left, you mean social, correct?
Alt-left, what's called alt-left, now the definition mm-hmm. might be controversial, but what is called alt-left, we know that there was alt-right, but, you know, alt-left, and to the extreme of alt-left, Antifa, you know, that became a new danger in America, and a lot of people who were left, including me and many, many of my friends, actually most of my friends, were pushed more to the right, more to the center, out of the extremism of the of that alt left.
Right.
So we were worried about the alt left. We were worried about the alt left probably as much as about the alt right. And I have many friends who switched to supporting Trump just to suppress the alt left. Something that outside America they don't understand. But there is a fear, you know, of that two extremes. Really, but you know, we saw the alt right did not really get through Trump's presidency to do what they would like to do. Not much, you know. They were, you know, under control with Trump's presidency to a certain extent. Yes, they showed up with weapons everywhere, but you know, there was no major incidences really. And right. But the alt left, we didn't see what would happen if they were emboldened, if they were put in power, if they were, you know, and there's a fear from that. I'm not excited about either one. And I was excited about Bernie's new, at least for Palestine, for the peace in the world. I think he would have pushed the agenda towards international peace and as far as the environment, it would have synced America with the European countries, with the European Union.
You mentioned Palestine. What Trump did was unprecedented by moving the embassy to Jerusalem and by giving plus the Golan Heights to Israel. Given quote unquote, by appointing his son-in-law to be the arbitrator of the peace talk between the Palestinians and Israel, and we know that his brother-in-law not only was a Jew, but he was pro-Zionism, so he was not fair at all when it comes to that Palestinian-Arab Palestinian-Israeli conflict. I don't want to call it Arab-Israeli conflict because it's not an Arab-Israeli conflict anymore. I know you disagree with me.
What did you call it?
Palestinian-Israeli conflict.
Oh, yeah, I definitely disagree, but that's a different topic.
Yeah. Well, Palestinian-Lebanese.
I don't recognize Palestine as much as I don't recognize Israel.
Right.
I don't recognize Lebanon as much as I don't recognize Israel, but that's a different topic for a different day.
So yeah, I'm so happy that we got rid of him. And there was a news yesterday that the new administration, the Biden administration, would nominate a secretary, an Arab Lebanese or Arab secretary, in one of the posts. Do you think this will come true?
I mean, it's possible.
Because Michigan was pivotal in nominating Biden.
And I'm not sure. I'm not sure what promises. I like what Amr Zahir said about Biden. You know, he said that Trump is hunger and Biden is ham. And in Islam, you're allowed to eat ham to protect yourself from hunger, you know. So this is the attitude of the really Arab-American vote, you know. And by the way, Arab-Americans in Dearborn, one out of three voted for Trump, two out of three voted for Biden. And that's not a big, you know, that's not, you know, that's a very interesting. So you cannot really generalize about the Arab-American community, say they're with Biden. Because almost one third voted for Trump. If Dearborn represents the Arab American vote, I'm not sure how much Dearborn is representative of the national Arab American vote. But we hope that you know these promises come true. It's all about really watching what's going to happen. You know, even Obama with all his beautiful rhetoric and beautiful attitude and going and speaking in Cairo and. You know that practically he caused a lot of problems in the Middle East. the drone attacks were maximized during Obama's time, and
yes,
there's a lot of comments on his presidency, to the point that I don't think, from an Arab American perspective, we can call it a positive, 100% positive.
Well, presidency. All we heard from Trump was only talk. He promised to withdraw the troops from Syria and Iraq, and he never did. So, and for those who claim that he's pro-peace, I don't think he is, because...
He withdrew from Syria, didn't he?
He only promised, but he didn't.
Is there any American troops in Syria now?
Yeah, of course, and he said they're there to protect the oil fields. He said this, and then,
what,
like,
what oil
publicly.
Field? Syria
has oil fields.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's what he said.
Where
he
is
said
there
it publicly.
Oil fields in Syria? I didn't know
it,
that Syria
He said it publicly. Yeah, close to the Kurds area.
Mm.
Yeah, so this is what he said. He said we're there to protect the oil fields. Mm-hmm. So boldly.
From who?
He didn't even hide it.
Protect it from who?
Like, basically to have it, like, not to protect it. Yeah, you're right. Protect it from who? Exactly.
I don't think they need oil right now. America is the biggest producer of oil now internationally. But it's interesting, like, to protect it from who,
You're talking about the shale oil, right? The oil that comes from rocks.
Yes. And
they say that they argue it's costly and it's not as cheap and easy to get, like, the oil from the Middle East. This is an argument.
Yeah, but still, I mean, that's the reason... The only reason that they import is just to preserve their, just because they have the money. But they are not in need at all. They're completely independent now from the Middle East as far as oil is concerned.
And during his presidency, everybody knows that the schism between the Arabs and Iran was, like, on the rise. And it is, like, we've never seen this before.
Mm-hmm.
So he did also fan the flames of this division. So he didn't, he did not try to unify, he did not have a unifying politics towards the Middle East. His politics was, like, called for division. And right. We know that in Lebanon also, like, his approach, even today, there was sanctions against Basile. You know Basile, right?
Yeah.
Jobran Basile. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, he's the president of the largest parliamentary bloc in Lebanon. And they just announced sanctions against him, as if, like, they wanted to do that before this administration has gone. So they wanted to do that before they're gone. Mm-hmm. And these sanctions claiming that he's a corrupt leader. And let's say he is a corrupt leader. What about the others? What about the others that are pro-American politics? Why only him? And we know that's not the reason for that.
Right.
Should we move to the lockdown?
We should talk about the lockdown. But first, I want to say something that is very advised not to be mentioned in a podcast like this. That we currently have 2 viewers. So thank you.
We're not very popular.
Thank you for those 2 who are watching this. It's the first episode. And I really didn't advertise for it because I didn't know if your internet is going to work. It's going to work. So I didn't want to take risk. But thank you for the 2 watchers. We have 2 viewers. So if you're interested in sponsoring this show, you get possibly 2 new customers.
Yeah, thanks for tuning in.
I mean, anyway, people can watch it later, but it is at the end of the day, it is a part of our intellectual contribution to the Ethernet. Lockdown. Willie, you are in London, and London is on lockdown. What's going on?
Well, the entire Europe is in lockdown, basically. But
Is it like a European decision?
No, it's not a European decision. Each country has its own rules. Mm-hmm. Even within the UK, Wales does not have any lockdown. Everything is fine in Wales, but in England and Northern Ireland and Scotland, that's where there are like stringent rules. You cannot leave the house unless it's emergency or unless you're going to buy like essential products. And so you are, yes, I don't know if you experienced that in America, but very, very tough rules. And people are, I know some people are going crazy, like it's impacting the mental health of some. And
so how long has it been in lockdown?
It just started 2 days ago, and it will last till the 2nd of December. But they said that they may prolong it, but they're trying not to, so people can live the Christmas season as natural as possible, as normal as possible. So it's very, very like, it's very hard to stay vigilant and viable and productive and within these rules. You cannot, and well, when the lockdown happened back in the spring, people would go to the parks because you can go to the park and meet with another person, like one person from another household, only one person. But now with the weather, the bad weather of the winter, you cannot even go to the park. So you are destined just to stay home and do the best of it.
Wow. So you're not even allowed to go to the park, to open spaces.
You are, but it's very cold to go to the park.
Oh. Mm.
It's very cold. Mm-hmm. And they call it like daily exercise. You can go for daily exercise, like walking or meeting somebody or sitting. And last time, there was a rise in not only mental illness. And this is strange. There was a rise in physical illness not related to corona.
Mm.
This was shocking. A rise in physical illness not related to corona during the lockdown. So it seems like when you break somebody's routines, this is when all this bad stuff will happen.
Right. It might be anxiety and stress. They reduce immunity by up to 80%.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
And they were talking about a quarter of a million of new infected of corona weekly in the UK. This is why they imposed this new lockdown. Mm-hmm. Hopefully it will end on December 2nd. Hopefully. Mm-hmm. And I know in America these rules are not that, they're not stiffened yet, right? And hopefully they won't be.
Yeah, I don't know. America is very confusing when it comes to the corona thing, because we have county rules, and then we have the state rules, and then we have city ordinances, and then we have the health department of the state, and then we have the CDC, and then we have federal rules, and sometimes they contradict. Sometimes it's so weird. Like, you have to check. If I'm traveling somewhere, I check like their county's ordinances, because everything is different. I was surprised to sometimes even a company would have its own rules. So if you have to check with your employer, you have to check with the place that you're going to. You have to
And it gets, are you hopeful there would be a remedy soon?
Yeah, I think, the vaccine is going to come out, no matter what all the rhetoric and the stories people create. They're working very, there's about 120 companies working on the vaccine. There's three to five of them are very advanced, Oxford and Johnson & Johnson, etc. And they were they're going to produce something very soon, and it's going to be tested. And, you know, 40% of people are not going to take it, according to some polls. Okay, so 60% will, and then the 40% will take their precautions more. And, you know, eventually it will phase out if no other evolution of viruses produce something new soon, because, you know, we never know. These things don't happen that often, but if it does, then we're back to, you know, to square one. But I hope that all the national and international health agencies will be, you know, more updated to tackle these anything that comes up in the future like that. But yeah, I mean, expectation like by August, September, things should start to go back to normal by next year.
And do you think, I ask you this as an educator, do you think schools would reopen?
I think by September of 2021.
And children will go back to school?
Yes. I mean, that's what I think, according to the vaccine information, and some people said that. I'm just copying what they said, right. Some experts in this field.
I didn't mention that in the UK, schools and universities stayed open. They didn't close.
No way.
Yeah.
So you have all this strict lockdown, and then children can go to school.
Exactly. Children and universities.
See how it's confusing? It's so confusing.
Yeah.
Like, I went to... you go to a museum. I went to the museum, and they were very strict. Like, you have to buy tickets ahead of time, and then you stand outside to just get in and sign up. You know, they're letting people come in, like, you know, one group at a time. And then you go in, and they make sure that there aren't more than, like, six people in one exhibition. And then, you know, you go in an airplane, and there is like 150 people squeezed in like sardines.
And nobody wearing masks.
No, they're wearing masks. But, what happened to, what happened to all this? And then you see, there was a person in the airport who was wearing like a whole body shield. You know, and he has, like gloves, and has, taped around the gloves and the whole thing. And while, I told him, like, don't you see the flight attendants? They're having only a mask, not even gloves or anything. And they are working in the airplane every day, the whole month. And they're okay, you know? Didn't you think about that? And then the mask is there's a lot of talk about the mask and its effectiveness and the side effects, of it. I started to have eye, inflammation because of, all the breathing that goes up your eye when you're wearing a mask.
Right.
So I just don't know. You go to a pool. The pool is open, but the jacuzzi is closed. The jacuzzi is closed by county order. The pool is open. Like, what's the difference between the pool and the jacuzzi? I don't understand.
Right. I don't know if you heard that in Lebanon, we surpassed China. I had this post on Facebook. We surpassed China in the number of affected. We have now 91,000 coronavirus affected. And in China, there are only 86,000. And when you compare the numbers like between China and Lebanon, we have about 5 million people living in Lebanon and 1.4
in a hotel.
And we surpassed China in the number of affected in coronavirus.
They give birth a day to more than the population of.
So it is really bad in Lebanon, unfortunately. Very, very bad.
It's like in India, there's more honor roll students than there are students in America.
So how is that working on, like, virtually? Can it be as productive as working from home?
Depends on the person and what you're doing. I think I am one of those people who are most productive in such circumstances. But I think, you know, whatever it is, when we come back, it will be totally different because people got a crash course in, you know, the 21st century within, you know, these 6 months. Whoever hated technology, was not comfortable with it, did not really see it, a reason to change, did not really, all these things, you know. They were forced to take this crash course, and most of them, they love it, and they've learned new tools. And I think schools, as far as I'm concerned, are not going back to status quo. Mm. Never. The schools went forward like 5-6 years. That's optimistically. Like if they were going to, that's if not, if the virus didn't happen, and the way they're going to go back is the same as schools of the year 2030, you know, or 2025, because I think technology is very fast these days. We can't even predict 2030. So that's a positive thing. I think commercial real estate has changed forever. I was in downtown Chicago yesterday, and it was a ghost city, a ghost city. I rented a bike, Lyft, instead of, you know, ordering a car, you can order a bike. So I took an electric bike to go to my destination, and I was, you know, driving in the middle of the streets. You know, Manhattan, many people are moving out. So commercial real estate will change forever. Work, you know, remotely will become a norm. This, for example, this platform has become normalized. There is tons of these platforms that came out. Everyone now knows how to use them. Everyone's getting used to them. So things changed, and I think things changed positively. We needed this catalyst to push us forward, and I'm thinking of it very positively. I mean, we're sorry for all the deaths and the suffering that was caused by it. It's a natural disaster, but I think a lot of good will come out of it.
This is an opportunity to finish any unfinished task? From a personal experience, there is something like I'm working on, you know, this volume of poetry, and and believe it or not, I do more work when there is no lockdown, because I'd go to a coffee shop and I take my laptop with me and I sit and I'm energetic, but then when I'm home, I feel low. I don't feel as productive as I am when I go out. True. So this lockdown is not helping me finishing the unfinished tasks that I have.
Yeah, so, maybe, I don't know. We have to, you know, I used, when the lockdown first started and I went into a very, very productive mood, I secluded myself from news. I shut down news. I secluded myself. I created a bubble because I have to create like motivation. And I created this like imaginary world that I'm in, that, you know, I am as if I've done this intentionally, as if I decided to stay home and work on my projects intentionally. And I secluded myself from negative news. But every once in a while, I would like wake up to the reality and I would feel really down. I would feel like, what am I excited about? You know, like the world is in shambles. But so I think sometimes you need to like put yourself in a bubble, and every good work came out. Actually, there are stories that I've read about the Spanish flu, 1918, and how there were a lot of artists and writers who actually have produced very important works during that time. Because, you know, people at that time, lockdown, and there's no TV, there's no internet, so it was even harder.
Correct.
So there were a lot of good works that are produced. And even people today, like, you know, even Bill Gates, who people hate and I love, when he wants to accomplish some thinking ahead, he has this little lake cabin.
Right.
And I wrote an article about it in dearbornblog.com. He goes to, and he sits there secluded it's completely isolated. It's very simple. Like, it's only a one studio, you know, simple little shack that he takes about 40 books with him. And he goes there, he reads and he writes and he thinks, and there's no technology. There's his cell phone is there, but he doesn't, you know, check it unless, you know, there's some important things.
So you advise people to be like, in order to be productive or more productive, to get rid of Netflix and to like of the internet and
no, not necessarily, but to imagine that they have decided themselves to stay home for a month to accomplish something, what would it be? You know, a simple question. If you were to stay home for a month to accomplish a project, what would it be? Do it, because you know what? You're never going to have this chance again, most probably in your lifetime.
Hmm.
So either now or never.
I think it comes down to the definition of distractedness. Like, do you get distracted if you watch something important? This is very important. Like, okay, when you have the remote control in your hand and you're flipping channels, there is always something important, always, and sometimes highly important. But that also could be a distraction, even though it's very important, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I cannot deal with that. I'm distracted very easily, because when I see something very important, I leave the task that I have to finish, and then I follow that.
Okay, so, here's something my friend told me, and it really changed the way I think about things. Because, like you said, you know, sometimes there's a documentary series. I mean, you're watching it; it's exciting, but and you're learning from it. You know. If you're watching Lawrence of Arabia, is that a movie or is that a lesson, you know, like a history lesson? So your mind can justify these things. And they are legitimate. There is value in everything. I mean, I'm not going to put down any show. There is artistic value in it and learning, a learning experience. But he said one thing that solved all these issues for me. He said, make sure that your output is at least equal to your input.
Mm-hmm. At least equal.
Yeah. So yesterday I was in Chicago and I was thinking to go to the Chicago Museum of Art. The Chicago Museum of Art is the second most important art museum in America after
what's number one? In America?
Yeah.
The Met.
The Met.
What?
And that's so easy.
Yeah.
I think it's not fair to, when you do these lists, to include New York. You know, you should exclude New York from any of these. Because the Met has in its archive, like not displayed, more art, more important art than the top 10 museums in America after it.
Wow.
It's a very important museum. Number three is Detroit, by the way.
Really?
Detroit Institute of Art, yeah. Mm-hmm. Thanks to Henry Ford. Or more specifically, Edsel Ford.
Number three, nationwide.
Nationwide. In terms of importance of the artworks. I was contemplating to go there, but I thought to myself, you know, I have taken in so much art in the last couple of years or year, you know, other than being a frequent visitor of the Detroit Institute of Art, you know, I was in Amsterdam. I visited several museums, in the Louvre, the Musée d'Orsay, and other museums, the Dalí Museum. I visited so much museums during the last year that I feel like, okay, you know, why am I taking more in? You know, let me focus more on out, you know, like mm-hmm. producing. So I didn't go because you have to, you know, balance your time between creating and between taking in. Right. So I think that is important for people like us, because, you know, there I can spend years reading. And it's very positive time. I mean, you know, I'm increasing my knowledge. But that statement made a lot of sense. But mm-hmm. you have to output as much as you're inputting. Otherwise, there's an imbalance. So I have a friend who's a very good reader. and he reads almost a book every few days. He has a huge library. He gives out books because there's no space in his house.
Bill Clinton used to read a book every day.
Right.
While he was a president.
Yeah. he doesn't socialize. He doesn't, speak much. He doesn't, you're going to continue reading and then you're 80 and you die. Okay, what did we benefit? What did you benefit? How is, you see, reading in itself is like doing art in a basement and burning it. You know, there's no value of knowledge if it's not going to create change.
Right.
If you're never going to produce, who cares if you're born? You know, mind as well reading. It's if you weren't even born, it doesn't. So that's an important question.
Yeah, that reminds me of the story of Abu Dharr al-Ghifari when he was a companion of the Prophet, and when he learned a few verses, then the Prophet told him, "Go to Bani Ghaffar and teach it to them, and don't just stay here by me, you know, waiting for more verses to come down. No. Go and apply these verses."
Right.
So yes, you said something very correct about applying what you know, applying your knowledge. Otherwise, what's the benefit of it?
Yeah, I mean, if there is any example of output being larger than input, it is the Sahaba. Where he learns for 2 days and then he becomes the king of Egypt.
Correct.
He is sent to conquer Egypt, مثلا, and he just was a Muslim, he became a Muslim a few years ago.
And one of the Umayyads whose life was saved after the Abbasids took power went to Spain and established Al-Andalus. You know, so yeah, you're right about that.
Yeah.
How long have you been online now?
47 minutes.
Yeah, I think we don't want to bore these two listeners if they're still.
Actually, it's one now.
We don't want to bore.
I'm not even sure. I think maybe it's my wife. Nada, are you listening to us?
So I think the next episode should be in like 20, 25 minutes, right?
Why don't you just join us, whoever is listening to us? And we'll make it a free show. And
So I think, the next episode should be like more focused and then not more than 25 minutes.
Really? 25 minutes? Okay.
Like half hour the most, But I'll focus on one subject because the chat today was more like casual. So
have you heard about Joe Rogan? Joe Rogan?
No.
Joe Rogan is a guy who has no special skills, really. He has a show, a podcast. It is now it's number one podcast in America. He's actually now trying to be bought by HBO or something, some company, I forgot. He has hundreds of millions of downloads a week now. And his podcast, and he started like that, chatting with his friends, and mostly failure, most of his starting, but later on he started picking up audiences and getting more interested, and now he's huge.
Joe Rogan,
yeah, number one podcast. But what is very special about his podcast is they're about 3 hours. 3 hours for long conversations. Like he sits with Elon Musk for like 3 hours. He smokes pot in his podcast. He's very casual, like drinks, whatever. They start the conversation very slow. I was shocked that this thing became successful because the trend was, we're losing attention. We need something shorter. And now these long form talks are actually very popular. So people open up when, long conversation, and they understand like concepts are broken down and, things are really understood. So that gives hope for people like us.
So we can get to 20 listeners, maybe.
Our goal is not listeners, right?
To get the word across, probably, to whoever wants to listen. And we're coming from an Arabic background, Arabic Western background, me and you, because I don't live in America. So it's a unique input to everything that goes around. So yes, I think that many people should listen to it because I think
we should do about 20 minutes talk, me and you, maybe two topics, each topic 10 minutes, and then we'll have like 20 minutes with a guest and make it, you know, about 40 minutes altogether. 40
Good
minutes
idea.
Is very yes. convenient. It's the average commute in America to work. So, you know, it would be a very comfortable listen. So maybe we can get Ali Mazih next episode.
Inshallah. They said Biden won because he said Inshallah. Do you agree with that?
I said don't expect any early early decision. He said Inshallah. المهم he doesn't start inshallah and ends up لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله
or إن لله
وإن إليه راجعون. Alright, Willie, and thank you for our audience.
Thank you.
You are to us the word.
Thank you. So next episode will be on the same date and the same day next week.
Yeah, I can do Saturdays at 12. 12 is convenient here. EST, because I usually have another show at 1.
All right.
Arab American Center for Culture and Arts.
Right.
So we can do 12 and finish 12:30, 12:40, and I can jump into the other podcast.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Wesley. Hey,
and thank you, Willie.
Looking forward.
Looking forward to the next episode. Please follow us, share it if it's useful. Give us some feedback, the person listening. Your feedback is very important. This is kind of a pilot episode. When we
in the next season, yeah,
popular, we'll probably delete this one. All right,
thank you, thank you very much. Bye bye.